This is Steve Sherlock with another in a series of podcasts for Franklin Matters. This is number 39-2, continuing the series of the Town Hall Forum, which was conducted by Governor Deval Patrick when he visited Franklin on May 17th, 2009. In this segment, we'll replay the presentation portion. We pick up with the governor completing his introduction and setting out the ground rules. He turns the mic over to Brendan Ryan, Director of Civic Engagement, who takes us through a series of slides. I intend to synchronize this audio with the actual slides. Synchronizing the audio with the slides will make this segment much easier to listen to and understand. Each time they refer to a slide, they don't always read the contents of what's on the slide itself. In the meantime, here is the audio.
All right, so why don't we get started? Brendan, you kick it off, and can I come on the busy case?
Does this work? Can everyone hear us? Turn down the lights a little bit. Can everyone see the screen okay? All right, so the governor and the representative said we're going to talk a little bit about the issues that they are facing on the Statehouse, specifically, as the rep said, this unprecedented economic crisis and what it's done to state government. Just use this slide to show you what it has done to state governments across the country, that what we're dealing with in Massachusetts is bad. It's not nearly as bad as it is in some other states, and we are definitely not alone. 49 states are currently in recession. One is at risk. The combined deficits of all states projected to be over $230 billion in the next two fiscal years. And many states are dealing with the same thing we're dealing with. Widespread budget cuts, layoffs, furloughs, new revenues, federal stimulus, and for those states lucky enough to have it like we are, a rainy day fund savings account to get them through. Pretty much, unless you have oil right now, your state is facing huge budget cuts. So this slide right here shows you how bad things have gotten from the state government budget perspective in the past year. In July, or in June actually, of last year, the legislature passed and the governor signed a budget for this fiscal year based on a consensus revenue estimate of $21.4 billion. That was House leadership, Senate leadership, the administration, outside economists, everybody looked at the forecast. Took a pretty conservative estimate of $21.4 billion, and we built spending around that number. Since then, as you see by this deficiting red line as it goes down across the months, we are now, I revised that number down to $17.9 billion. That means in the span of a year, we have lost all that money and had to find ways to close that deficit in real time. This was happening as we're spending money, as programs were happening, as services were being delivered. So just a little bit more background on the deficit. As most of us know, a deficit is when revenues and spending are not equal. And like that last slide just showed, Massachusetts faces a deficit now because revenue has dropped so dramatically, more than anyone could have expected in the past year. So in this past year, $3.4 billion loss in tax revenue. That's out of a $28.5 billion budget overall. That gives you some sense of how devastating the loss that has been. The deficit is a little bit bigger than 3.4 because we saw additional snow removal costs from this winter and increased costs in safety net programs, which makes sense. Spending for those programs generally goes up as the economy goes down. As we were, when the governor filed his proposed budget for next fiscal year, which begins this July 1st and runs through June 30th, he filed that budget at the end of January, and we had a projected budget deficit of $3.5 billion. By contrast, the Senate filed their budget last week, and they were then with a budget deficit of $5.4 billion. So again, even in 4 months, we estimated another loss of revenue next year of $2 billion. These are a lot of numbers, a lot of big numbers, and hard for us to understand, but I think you get the picture here that we are dealing with a serious problem. There is no simple solution, there's no easy soundbite that's going to fix any of this stuff. So the conversation we're looking at today is about choices, the choices we face in this crisis. What kind of government do we want? What do we want our government to do? And how are we willing to pay for it? The administration, the House of Representatives, the State Senate have all presented lean budgets for 2010 that cut really services that I think we all hold dear, and they're going to cause a lot of pain, things that we will feel across the state. The administration and the House have proposed some revenue to help offset some of those cuts. I think we expect the State Senate to do the same in the next couple of weeks if they get into their budget debate. So as the governor said, as the representative said, we're here today to engage in this conversation. and ask you to engage with us and with your neighbors so that we can have some buy-in and get your knowledge and where you're taking as you make decisions. So a little bit of background, how we pay for state services. You see the pie chart on the left. 62% of the state budget comes from taxes.
That's the blue.
That is the big blue. The green is federal reimbursements, that's Medicare, Medicaid programs like that. That's almost a third of the budget. Departmental revenue, that yellow slice at 10%, those are the fees you pay when you go to the R&B or if you get a fishing or hunting license. On the pie chart to the right, that breaks down the 62% that comes from taxes in terms of which taxes pay the most. And you see again in blue on the right, income tax is 58% of all tax revenue that we collect in the state. Sales tax, that's the orange slice on the bottom, that's 21%. Corporate and business taxes are in yellow right there, 12%. Other smaller taxes add up in the red at 9%. So when you see what we've seen in this recession, people losing their jobs, obviously that has an effect on the income tax. You see the income tax is such a large source of our tax revenue is such a large source of the state budget revenue. You start to understand why we're facing the problem we're facing and why it keeps getting worse as state budget is a lagging on the rest of the economy. So as people lose their jobs, we count on those income taxes, and as they don't show up months later, we start to feel pain. So this is a little bit of background on what we spend state dollars on. This is a complicated chart, but if you look at the bottom half right now, yellow and the purple, healthcare and human services, 31 and 17% of the budget respectively. 48% of the budget is spent on health and human services. On the left in the aqua blue section, education and Chapter 70 local aid, 21% of state spending. That's money that either goes directly to schools, pre-K, K-12, or goes to cities and towns as school assistants, local aid, the things that help keep the property tax down, the things that help pay for programs at the Beautiful Senior Center. On the right, the other quarter of the state budget, you see 1% on transportation. This is not misleading, but a little confusing. Most of our transportation expenditures are on capital costs as opposed to operating costs. This breaks down how we spend our operating budget.
Can we just pause right there? Does everybody understand the difference between those two, or does anyone not understand the difference between those two? Because that is important. Want a little bit more on that?
Yeah.
Difference between the operating and the capital budget? Okay, so the operating budget is the budget that is supported by that earlier chart that shows all the tax revenues and fees that come from whatever source to state government. And that pays for salaries and services directly. The capital budget is what the bonding pays for. Do you know what bonding is? Bonding is basically the debt that the Commonwealth incurs for long-term projects. So it's like a mortgage we take on certain long-term spending. Roads, bridges, public college and university buildings, and so on. The legislature passed the largest bonding package between housing and transportation and public higher ed and broadband expansion in history. We asked for that, and it's a plan over the next decade. Most of the transportation expenditure, road bridge repair and so forth and expansion, is on the bonding or capital budget, and that's why it's not budget. Okay?
So those slides right there just give you an overview. Those are some of the things we can come back to during the discussion. Like I said, how bad the problem is and what kind of tough choices we're facing and try to put together a budget for next year. In January, at the end of January, Governor Patrick gave his State of the Commonwealth speech in which he called for a season of reform. Governor, this is tomorrow where I talk about the governor exactly. I think the governor recognized that as we're facing this economic crisis, as he said many times, it is, as bad as it is also an opportunity. It's a chance to change some things that we have not had a chance to change in a long time. I think we all understand that this kind of challenge gets people to think differently, puts options on the table that we haven't been able to deal with. So in his speech at the end of January, the governor laid out a series of reforms that he would be looking to enact in the first half of this year. One, transportation reform. Two, pension reform. Three, ethics and lobbying reform. I'm just going to run through those briefly. Next slide. Transportation reform. Governor voted for transportation reform back in 2012. This is the one you heard a lot about. Most of the attention was around the proposed gas tax, didn't get as much attention to the reform piece. And the governor, when he filed this bill, was up front then, as he said, every time we filed a revenue bill in 2 years, that he would not ask for the gas tax, would not sign a gas tax without these reforms that were on the table. First major reform is consolidation and accountability. There are six state agencies that deal with transportation right now. If you go across a bridge in Massachusetts, it can be managed by any one of five different state agencies under the current system. The governor's proposal would streamline that and consolidate those agencies into three that were driven by what they dealt with. So there would be an agency that dealt with roads, an agency that dealt with rail, an agency that dealt with the airport. It makes a little bit more sense than the way we have it now. Also, it helps save, that would obviously save a lot of money as we reduce a lot of redundancy. Also, by reforming the benefit rules for the Turnpike and T employees, bringing them into the state health care system, that would help save money. Ending the 23-year health care for employees at the MBTA. What this is if you work at the MBTA for 23 years, you are immediately eligible for your pension after those 23 years. I was getting one in the state house from the governor. Don't think that the folks are entitled to their pension that they have paid into, but the governor's proposal would make it so that folks can start receiving that pension at a reasonable retirement age and put that reform in now, not just for new employees, but can actually start to see some of these savings when we're showing up. We appreciate it. The House and the Senate have both taken up transportation bills. They both passed very good transportation bills. They're in conference committee right now. In a matter of weeks, I think you might see a bill come out from the governor's desk on that. Pension reform, this is one that has been a lot in the paper a lot recently. Again, the governor wants to, he's not filed legislation on this, but very clear what we'd like to see on pension reform. House representatives took the lead on this issue. Speaker Leo has made this a top priority of his. Two of the pieces the governor would like to see in there, one would be to eliminate the one-day, one-year rule for certain state employees. If you work 1 day of calendar year, you get credit for that full calendar year towards your pension. And again, we'd like to apply these reforms to both current and future employees, as opposed to just applying it to people who get jobs after July 1st or someday, so that we can start to see the savings that will come as part of the pension reform in the next couple of years. And House and Senate have both passed good bills on this issue, because they're in conference committee right now, and they continue to work with the governor, working with legislative leadership to make sure we get the strongest bill possible out of that. Finally, ethics and lobbying reform. In January, on the first day of the legislative session, the governor passed a very strong ethics and lobbying bill. Massachusetts has some of the strongest ethics and lobbying laws in the country, but I think we've all learned that there are more than we do. We make the stronger and have the folks, the investigative powers be stronger than the Secretary of State and the Attorney General. Also prohibit some of the gifts that are given to or because of the official position. And close a loophole that allows some lobbyists to do their work without registering. The House passed a strong bill. The Senate passed a bill just this week. Again, that is headed to conference committee. They're not actually in conference committee yet. And we'll see how that comes out in the next couple of weeks. So the reason we put these reforms on the table, even though this conversation is mostly about the state budget and the problems we're facing there, again, as you see, the governor has said time and again, he does not feel comfortable asking the public to support any new tax just to fund the status quo. There are challenges here, there's a crisis here that gives us the opportunity to change things on BK Bill. To not use this opportunity to do that would be a missed opportunity. I won't read the governor's speech to you, you can see it there. I think it concludes very well. Taxes are a means, a better government is the end, it's better government that matters most. So, seeing the budget picture, the deficit that we're facing, we've seen some reform pieces the governor's put on the table and asked that those get passed before we support any new revenue. But because of what we saw in the first few slides, the governor's also been clear, we do need new revenue in Massachusetts. This slide, I'm going to ask you to jump in on this one a little bit, Governor, because I think you can explain it better than I can.
Yeah, it's less important. We can talk about these particular numbers if you want to, but what's less important is two things. First of all, our approach to the gap, the 2 year gap is this number. That's the number to focus on. $9.3 billion between this fiscal year and the coming. And our approach has been a blended approach. It's been a combination of cuts and spending controls, some use of rainy day funds from the state, some use of federal stimulus money, and thank goodness, because it would be worse without it. I do want to be clear, here's the gap. This is how much federal stimulus we were able to use. I just want to focus on that because some people, I think, have been under the misimpression that the federal stimulus bill was enough to close our gap. It has not been enough here or in any other state. It just means it was not as bad as it might have been. And then a discussion about revenue to close the rest of that gap. The principal difference between the approach we have taken in the administration and the approach that the legislature has taken is that our proposals are for very targeted kinds of revenues or taxes for very specific things. So, for example, local options for local aid, for municipal needs to try to close that gap, or for eliminating the exemption on the sales tax exemption on liquor and soda and candy for a wellness fund to fund to close the gap that we've had to create, the cuts we've had to make in public health programs, recovery programs, and so forth. The legislature has taken a more broad-based approach, and in the House anyway, has settled on the sales tax, one and a quarter pennies increase, right? And I don't think the Senate has come out with their proposal yet, but they're going to focus on the sales tax as well, we think. But that's the difference. So the point is, though, it's a blended approach because it has to be a blended approach. And the debate right now is over which cuts and what kind of revenue, these lines. That's the debate in Beacon Hill. I don't mean to limit it to that, but just that's what this is really meant to illustrate.
Just a little bit more about some of the spending cuts that the administration has implemented as a way to help close that gap. There will be at least 1,000 positions eliminated with an additional 750 that we just announced by the end of this year. That saves us $40 million. Suspended all merit pay raises for managers, frozen wages for FY09, and all new collective bargaining contracts. And as we reported in the press recently, the administration has been working with union, state employee unions to start talking about other ways to control costs and avoid more layoffs. Lastly, to achieve further savings, all executive branch managers are taking furlough days between now and the end of the year, and this fiscal year, and we'll probably have to look at doing that again next year. This slide just builds off what the governor said about the targeted revenue proposals that he has put on the table and the administration has put on the table. That first line, elimination of sales tax exemptions dedicated to the wellness fund. What that means, alcohol, soda, and candy are not currently charged a sales tax. We would remove those exemptions that would generate approximately $150 million and use that money to fund public health and wellness programs in the state government. 1% meals tax, 1% hotel room tax, again, collected statewide and redistributed to municipalities to help them deal with their local budget issues. Last expansion of the bottle bill, that just means those plastic water bottles we all have right now, if you don't get a nickel deposit on them, your soda bottles, we would change that and help dedicate that to sewer rate relief. Down bottom, you see the 19-cent gas tax increase that has been proposed. To what the governor said earlier about the operating budget and the capital budget, it's a little tricky. Most of the 19-cent gas tax increase, most of that $494 million would go to solve the problems on the capital side as opposed to the operating side. But in total, the targeted revenue proposal is $814 million, which would get us a long way there, but as you saw from the other side, it's still not nearly enough to close the whole gap. To the point the governor made about the federal stimulus, the Commonwealth is going to receive $8.7 billion in federal stimulus funding in the next 3 years, and that is a very, very good thing. $3 million of that can be used on the operating budget to prevent cuts of programs and services to help make the problem not as bad as it would be. The rest of that will go, again, to the capital budget for infrastructure-related projects. Some of that remaining money will also be distributed directly to cities, towns, individuals, and programs through grants and programs like that. This slide, I think, is one of the most informative and the most important in the entire presentation. Looking at a $5.4 billion deficit for the next fiscal year, here are some of the options, some of the popular options people suggest, and how those compare to the problem. you laid off every state employee on the operating budget, you would still have a full $1.1 billion.
Hold it, Ben.
Did everyone hear that? Do you understand? That's how serious this is. That's not a proposal. It's to give you a sense of what we're talking about. It's not a proposal. It's to give you a sense. People say, well, how come we can't cut more? We could lay off every single employee who works in the state government and still have a $1 billion hole. It's to try to get across the sense of the scope. We could shut down all of human services, every single agency, all the agencies you see here, we'd still be $700 million in the hole. Cut every dollar in pre-K and K-12 education, every single one, still a $600 million hole. Cut every dollar we spend on public safety, every single dollar, and have a $4.4 billion hole. The reason this is up here is not to talk about these as realistic options. I don't think these are. Maybe some of you do. I don't think these are realistic options. But it's to give you a context of a sense of the degree of difficulty that we're talking about and why, at a time when everybody is hurting, we are having to have an unpopular conversation about revenue. Okay?
You're taking each one of those items.
Excuse me. You're taking each one of those items as examples, not in a cumulative way. I just wanted to make sure that was clarified. Thank you.
This slide here shows some of the different options that were put on the table to generate revenue across the top of some of the broad-based proposals on the bottom row, some of the more targeted proposals. And you can see as you go across, increased property taxes depending on where you live. This is one way to help if we wanted to make cuts at the state level, global aid, Chapter 70, or education funding. One way to pay for that would be increased property tax. You see a 1% increase in the corporate tax, we get the state $100 million. 1% increase in the sales tax. For context, a little less than the House has proposed, a little less than the Senate will probably propose. We get $723 million a year. 1% increase in the income tax, which is, I think, one of the few revenue proposals which is not on the table at the State House right now. A 1% increase in the income tax, we get $1.7 billion on our, if you reduce our flat rate of 5.3%. Just across the bottom row, like I mentioned, the exemptions on candy, soda, and liquor, if they were subjected to the sales tax, and I believe this figure is if they were subjected to the current 5% sales tax, that would generate $150 million statewide. Closing the telecom tax loophole. Telecom companies right now don't pay property tax on their poles or their wires. Even though the electrical company pays property tax on those same poles and wires. It's a loophole that's been in state law for about 100 years. Close that, that would be $54 million. 1% increase in meals and hotel taxes across the state generated about $158 million. Lastly, as we talked about, the 19 cent a gallon gas tax generated $494 million in revenue, again, largely for the capital budget as opposed to the operating budget. So, Governor, Representative, now we want to have a discussion about some of the things we've just seen. Of the services that we want to provide, which are the most important, which ones we cut, understanding that no matter which revenue proposal is on the table right now, I think anywhere to talk about this, none of the revenue proposals go anywhere near far enough to close the hole entirely. There are going to be more cuts in addition to the cuts that have been made in this past year.
Great. Should we bring the lights back up? So, keep it, Brendan, keep it up here, okay, in case we want to go back, anybody wants to go back to one of the, it's a pretty stressful time, as you can see, some very difficult choices. I will say that when I was growing up, my grandmother used to forbid us from describing ourselves as poor. She said, always say you're broke, because broke is temporary. And this is temporary, but it will be difficult for right now. So we're trying to, the conversation is, how do we get from here to there and keep the kind of commonwealth that you want and we want intact and strong? How do we make the right decisions today to ensure we're as strong as possible when the economy turns back around? So let me hear what you think. Yeah.
This podcast has been a public service provided to my fellow citizens of Franklin, Mass. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.blogspot.com. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The musical intro and closing is from the PodSafe Music Network, featuring John Schmidt, powerful, exhilarating piano music. I hope you enjoy.